Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air until 10. We are now 25 days into March 2025. And I'm sure go hauling yesterday. Lovely, lovely day, wasn't it? Cloudy today now, but it still feels very nice. Cad Iontas, soon we'll be complaining of a drought. We're at your service this morning as ever. Tap out your thoughts on the WhatsApp. That's 0870 32 32 32. And as ever, you can email Oliver at rte.ie. Tarish Jock. What's happening today? Well, I'm going to be speaking to the author of a debut novel, another debut novel, getting rave reviews here and across the water in Britain as well. And like all the exciting new authors in the English language, she's Irish and sadly living in London. Well, I don't say sadly, it might be good for her, but they all seem, all the young talent living in London because of the thing here and in the north as well, the housing thing. And that's what it's about, really. Róisín Lanigan is the author's name, and it's essentially a ghost story that captures the horrors of Generation Rent. So it's going to be eye-opening for those well out of the renting years maybe, and at the same time too familiar to those still in them and likely to be in them for most of their lives. It's a strange one, Generation Rent, isn't it? Because it seems to cover a lot more than just youngsters. It's 20s, 30s, all the way into 50s. It's just rent, rent, rent forever. And one side does very well out of it, and the majority don't do well at all. And the book by Róisín Lanigan is inspired by her own experience of a brutal rental market in London, which is appalling there. Well, I don't think it's as bad as Dublin, just at least there's availability of places more so than you'd get here. She also has an unbelievable life story as well for a young woman. We'll have more later. And it was one of those books where I actually had to stop reading it at night. And as the story, it's a ghost story, but there's such an oppressive atmosphere from the house that the character Anya finds herself in. We'll come back to that later. It's a good moment at the minute to be talking about authors, because you heard in Morning Ireland, great success for Anne Enright and Paul Lynch in a prize which can be announced on Thursday. Exciting times. Also exciting times in sport as well for Irish people doing very well. Mason Melia, of course, you'll know Mason Melia had that record-breaking moment. He broke the League of Ireland transfer record when he agreed to join Tottenham Hotspur from St Patrick's Athletic for £1.5 million, and he's still playing for St Pat's. And due to Brexit rules, he won't be going over to Spurs until early next year, 1st of January. But he became the Republic of Ireland's under-21's youngest ever goal scorer on Monday night. It was a 3-1 defeat of Hungary in a friendly. And that's why he's in the news again. And he turns 18 in September. OK, so what's the record? The record-breaking moment. He's 17 years, 6 months and 2 days. The previous record set in the Ireland under-21's, Troy Parrott, was 17 years, 7 months and 2 days. So it's exactly a month he's broken it by. Imagine this. I mentioned the Athletic New York Times piece about the Irish teenagers doing incredible things in the leagues here and heading to the market in England in the Premier League and the Championship as well. It's just such a moment for Irish fellas in football. So one of those positive things with everything else going on in the world. You would have seen that. You heard that story in Morning Ireland about the White House confirming that they inadvertently added a journalist to a Signal, which is a messaging group quite like WhatsApp. Senior US officials were discussing plans for airstrikes in Yemen, which is the poorest part of the Middle East. Extraordinary story. Be careful who you add to your WhatsApp group. This journalist of The Atlantic just couldn't believe that he just assumed it was some sort of hoax, it was fake, until he saw news of airstrikes that he had seen being exchanged in this WhatsApp group. Anyway, be careful what you do with your data and your DNA, because today a DNA testing company in the United States has gone bankrupt. Now, the problem here is its customers are 15 million people who have sent their genetic information, saliva samples essentially, in the post, which contain their family and personal health history. The company's gone bankrupt, which means that DNA, the data, is up for sale. And some of the customers, mostly American, but some of the customers are in Ireland, because 23andMe sold saliva test kits here and store them and linked up to what they purported to be your ancestors and so on. The company is named after the 23 chromosome pairs that make up the human genome, and they provide the saliva-based test kits to customers to help them track their ancestry. Now, there are scientific limitations about this, and some genetics people say they're not testing your ancestry at all. It's problematic because it infers that you've got this, your individual's ancestry. But of course, the genetic information is very limited because it's only based on living populations. And it depends where the company is based, because the databases will be skewed towards different parts of the world. So they're connecting people to people. And it's problematic, to say the least. What happened here is interesting, because 23andMe is one of these companies that had a lot of issues. There was a data breach in 2023. Hackers appeared to target Jewish and Chinese customers, gained access to personal information from nearly 7 million profiles. This company is valued $6 billion a couple of years ago, which just shows the strength of the market of these ancestry DNA databases online. And it was traded from $6 billion to 50 million last week before the bankruptcy filing, because people just didn't have faith in how their data was being stored after the data breach and so on. So there's now a risk that your data, if you sent it to 23andMe, could get sold or transferred to a new company which might want to use it for new purposes. Of course, this is happening anyway, even in the companies that are doing very well. They've been selling to pharmaceutical companies who are very interested in your saliva, to say the least. A privacy is power advocate, Professor Carissa Veliz, said this is arguably the most valuable personal data that you have. If you gave your data to 23andMe, you gave them the genetic data of your parents, your siblings, your children, and even distant kin who did not consent to that or even know that it's happened. Make it delighted for yourself. Just let the advice is just be on a Cormac, our fad indeed. Now, speaking of the American situation at the moment, Fintan Toole is an interesting piece, this morning's Irish Times, and he's talking about how Ireland has been in this love triangle for many, many years, a process of triangulation with three sides. He said America, Britain and Europe. And he says, like it or not, we've remained very closely intertwined with Britain, because of obviously the share, the common popular culture, which I've just even referenced with Irish lads. We go, oh, they've done well in Britain. Excellent. And the Brits love them. That's a sign of them doing well. And in economic terms, became the first 51st state of the American Union, because it became a home from home for American multinational capital. And we allow the tech companies to do whatever they want to Europe as a result, and vindicated its national independence, says Fintan, by acquiring an equal seat at the European table. So that's the love triangle. But the genius of the arrangement, he says, is that one thing could negate the other. So we became really and truly not British, because American investment freed us from the economic dependency from across that little pond. And we weren't subsumed into the American empire, because we're very good Europeans. We always do everything the Europeans will tell us, and sometimes way faster and sooner and to a greater extent than everybody else. But also not quite the EU either, because we're in the Anglo-American world, not just linguistically, but economically and ideologically. So that was all fine. The advantage is that he's basically saying we're being slippery lads for too long, and we couldn't get caught in anything. We slipped away from European obligations to tax all the tech giants and so on, because we slipped away from military neutrality as well, and the duty to defend ourselves and to at least patrol territorial waters around us, which is becoming a problem now. And we also slipped away from the obligations of being too American, because we stayed out of all the America, the forever wars that have gone on kind of quietly. I mean, Shannon is still very much involved as well. But he says now, the point of his whole thing is, the triple somersault is falling flat on his face now. Our delightful love triangle is ending in a nasty divorce. The first of the three was, of course, the Brits and Brexit. Now the second has exploded. The American relationship has turned toxic. It is striking that the grand narrative of Micheál Martin's visit to the Oval Office was the familiar theme of evasion. Phew, we got away with it again. We dodged the bullet. Well done, Micheál, for saying and doing nothing, for just sitting there on your sweaty hands. And he says, we can't triangulate anymore. The era when we could play different ideas of Irishness belonging off each other basically is over. We are what we were. We really are where we are, which is to say, in a Europe that is having to rapidly redefine its own place in the world under pressure of a hostile US on the one side and a murderous Russia on the other. So the party's over, kids. There you go. On the text, 51551, by the way, for your text, is this ageism, says this person. I am 70, I am renting, and there are more like me. It's a precarious existence. Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm sort of objecting to that term, generation rent, because it implies there's only people in their 20s and 30s. And from what I'm hearing, and as you're proving, it seems to be across absolutely everybody. It is to the profit of a very small number of companies, many of which are the funds not based here, and has absolutely squeezed pretty much every single demographic there is. Sad face. Do you know who else is sad at the moment? sad men. We're not sure if they're sad because they're all wearing beards now, apparently. So this is in The Guardian this morning. Do you like beards, by the way? Is this a thing that people find attractive in a partner, a beard? What is going on with facial hair? When did this begin? It's the social media again. Of course, we've let them run rampant here to get the little scrapings of their tax. And it has turned perfectly healthy, happy people insecure and sad about their appearance. And it seems especially men. Beard procedures are now following. Well, beard procedures, first of all, same thing as the hair transplants. They do the kind of follicular transplant, basically. So they take, you get thicker areas of hair at the back of your head. They graft them onto the less hairy parts of the scalp. And now this is also happening on your face as well. In a British clinic, they're saying that initially follicular unit extraction for beards would only usually happen on victims of trauma, people who've been injured in accidents, burns, soldiers with shrapnel wounds and so on. And he said you'd treat about 12 people a year in London. But awareness of hair transplant has grown in the last few years thanks to hair transplants at the top of their head like Wayne Rooney and so on. Interest in beard restoration has exploded since the pandemic. There are no statistics, but this guy was has tripled the number of people he's been treating, basically, in just 3 years. He says, I think there's a new form of masculinity where the beard has become important. And now every man wants to be like Gerard Butler in the film 300, which is a 2006 film that men are still obsessed about because it's about the Roman Empire and so on. It's a wild west, however, this industry, and that's across in England. Evidence of male insecurity around facial hair abounds online, where any prospective transplant patient starts his journey. They go in places like Reddit, which is kind of a thread, social media thread, that you can chat and you can put in beards there. There are 1.2 million anonymous members of a beards message board on Reddit. Most of them feature images of fabulous beards and maintenance tips, but it's also a place where the less hirsute will seek advice. In one post, a man with a big beard asks, he wants a transplant to fill in the tiny gap below his lower lip, even though he's a huge beard. He says, I like my beard, but I'm insecure about this area. He's 24. And loads of people telling him, your beard is fine. And he says, no, I need to get a transplant. And that's just a whole new area of sadness. There you go. This text says, my hubby would be out the door if he grew facial hair. Okay. Very big in the 70s, kind of like flatline, but all very bare faces there for a couple of years. And the last 5 to 10 years, beard mad, they're going for. Lots of fresh face young fellas, though. The Hothouse Flowers, actually, they're hairy lads. They're being added to the Glastonbury bill. Irish acts also include the Corona, Oisin Leach, Lorraine Nash. They're among the latest Irish acts to be confirmed for the acoustic stage at the Glastonbury Festival, one of the world's biggest festivals, happening in England, of course. The Riptide Movement also been added in as well. The Henry Girls, not familiar with them. And the British band. Oh, and of course, there are other bands. Of course, CMAT we already knew is there. Kneecap as well. The Scripts, no problem. It's loads of Irish music. We're intertwined entirely. But this band as well, we will start this morning. Inhaler. 51551 for your texts. We're up and running for Tuesday. Good morning.